When your body is worn out, a hearty meal really satisfies, though only temporarily. But there is a satisfaction that is lasting, profound, and permanent. Finding it is a matter of hungering for the right things, as you'll see today on Grace to You. You know, your body automatically tells you when it needs food. We all know what hunger feels like. But do you know what it feels like to be hungry for happiness? To want that deep down joy that, well, difficult circumstances, even tragedies, can't shake. Oddly enough, before you can satisfy your hunger to be happy, you first have to hunger for something else. And today on Grace to You, John MacArthur explains exactly what you need to hunger for if you want to know happiness from the inside out. That is the title of the current study here on Grace to You, Happiness from the Inside Out. Turn with us to Matthew chapter 5 as John gives some more background on what's referred to as the Beatitudes, the statements in the Sermon on the Mount that begin with the words, "Blessed are."
Jesus offered people a kingdom of happiness. The word blessed basically means happy, satisfied. He was offering blessedness. He was offering real happiness. But he was offering it on terms very different than the Jews might have expected. Each of the Beatitudes expresses conditions and or characteristics that belong to those who enter into his kingdom. Christ, as you remember, came as a king. Matthew points that out. His kingdom is a spiritual kingdom. He rules over the hearts and lives of those who believe in him. This kingdom has certain characteristics, and the characteristics are outlined in the Beatitudes. This kingdom is made up of people who are poor in spirit, who mourn, who are gentle or meek, who hunger and thirst for righteousness, who are merciful, pure in heart, peacemakers, and who have been persecuted, insulted, and against whom all kinds of evil has been spoken falsely. Those are the things that characterize those in the Lord's kingdom. But in spite of all of that, which seems like anything but a happy list, I mean, poor in spirit, mourning, meek, hungering, thirsting, and even suffering. In spite of that, the note that signals each beatitude is the word blessed or happy. There is in his kingdom true happiness, true satisfaction. Kingdom people are happy, and they're happy because they're characterized by these conditions. Now we come to verse 6, the fourth in this list of Beatitudes, Beatitudes meaning statements of blessing. Verse 6 says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied," or "they shall be filled." This Beatitude speaks about a strong desire. It speaks about a driving passion, a consummate ambition. Those who are hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Hungering and thirsting here communicate to us something of a deeply felt need. And that's exactly the point that our Lord is making. People who come into his kingdom and people who live in his kingdom are characterized by a certain kind of hunger and thirst. They have a strong desire. They are driven by a passionate ambition. They are on a very intense pursuit. This is not uncommon to mankind, to be intense, to be passionate, to be pursuing. In fact, most people spend their lives pursuing the wrong thing. Many people, of course, have perverted ambitions, but even those who have ambitions for what on a human level might be noble find themselves at the end of their life either having never attained what they pursued or having attained it found that it wasn't all that it was supposed to be. People in the world pursue fame and fortune and glory and possessions, achievements that will bring them a certain amount of power or a certain amount of praise or a certain amount of comfort, a certain amount of ease and pleasure. And sometimes, because of all these wrong ambitions, ambition itself is somehow put down, but ambition is a wonderful thing if ambition is directed in the right way. In fact, that's precisely what this passage is talking about. The Apostle Paul, remember, told the Corinthians that he had an ambition, and his ambition was to be pleasing to God. Nothing wrong with being driven by a passion. Nothing wrong with pursuing a goal. And that's the implication here in Matthew chapter 5, that the people who come into the kingdom and people who live in the kingdom are passionate people. They are very much aware of what they don't have and how desperately they want it. And that's depicted in the language of hungering and thirsting. People in the kingdom have a passion about something. They have a strong desire. They are ambitiously pursuing it. It is not a material thing. It is not worldly glory or honor or possessions. It is righteousness. And righteousness is to the kingdom citizen what food and water is to the natural person. That's why the parallel is so good. Food and water are necessities, not luxuries, and so is righteousness. People know, you know and I know, you can't live without food and you can't live without water. It's impossible to live without it. And so it's impossible to live in God's kingdom without righteousness. Our physical life depends on food and water. Our spiritual life depends on righteousness. By the way, people in the biblical times knew a lot more about hunger and thirst than we do. It's rare for us ever to be hungry or thirsty. We have ready access to instant food and drink at any time. But people in the ancient world didn't have that wonderful advantage, and famine was very common, and so was drought. You remember it was a famine that drove Joseph's brothers into Egypt, as recorded in the book of Genesis. And ever since that first recorded famine, man has faced famine through the centuries, and in the Middle East, it has been a somewhat common experience. Hunger and thirst, famine, drought, starvation. Hunger has always been a very close neighbor to the human race. And this physical hunger of men, which becomes such a desperate thing, is only a sort of small symbol of the deeper, more serious hunger of the heart that is identified here, the hunger that is a spiritual hunger. The parallels must be drawn so that you understand this. When we say somebody is hungry and thirsty, we mean probably they missed lunch by 15 minutes, or at the outside, a half an hour. But when the Bible talks about hunger and thirst, it's talking about an exigency for which there is no immediate solution. It's talking about a certain level of desperation. And the people who come into God's kingdom come because they have a desperation. The unsaved person whose heart is moved, who hears and understands the message of the gospel, has awakened in him by the work of the Spirit of God an immense compulsion toward righteousness that nothing else can satisfy. In the heart of the non-believer, there is a hunger for sin. But God in his mighty power reaches into that heart at the point of conviction and takes out that hunger for sin and replaces it with a hunger for righteousness. And the person stops seeking that which is not bread and seeks the true bread of life. Or as Jeremiah puts it very vividly in Jeremiah 2:13, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed themselves out cisterns, broken cisterns that can hold no water. They are thirsty, all right, but they turn their back on the true water. They're hungry, but they turn their back on the true bread. But we live in a world of people who are hungry and thirsty, driven people, pursuing, compelled people. And they're running as if they were starving and running as if they were perishing with thirst after what they think will satisfy. And it doesn't. But the people in the kingdom also are ambitious, they're driven, they're passionate, but it's for righteousness. Think about the prodigal son. The prodigal son, Luke 15, he had a lot of passions. In that little story, you see them repeatedly. First of all, he had a consuming desire for money, for earthly treasure. He had a consuming desire for what it could buy by way of possessions and pleasure. He had a passion for iniquity, and because of his drive for sin and his drive for pleasure and his drive for possessions and his drive for material things, he went to his father and basically demanded his inheritance. And then he took his inheritance, you remember the story in Luke 15, and he went out and he just wasted it on all those things which he passionately desired. And he wound up satisfied, is that right? No, he wound up empty. When he had managed to catch everything he was chasing, when he had managed to achieve all of his goals, when he had managed to experience all of those ambitions, he was empty. And he thought to himself, how many hired servants, slaves in my father's house have bread enough and to spare? He had absolutely nothing. He wound up working for some Gentiles, no doubt, in a pig farm, slopping pigs and eating pig slop. When he decided it would be better to go home to his father. And at that point, the parable is saying, his hunger changed. First, he was hungry for money and earthly treasure that he might fulfill his lusts. Then he was hungry just to be satisfied with pig slop. And finally, he was hungry enough to go back to all the bounty that his father had. That's the picture of hungering and thirsting after righteousness. When you've had everything you thought would satisfy and it's just pig slop, you go back, re-examine your heart, and if the Spirit of God should prompt you, a new hunger for righteousness emerges. 1 John 2:15 to 17, very familiar passage, reminds us that appetites can never be satisfied by this world's fare. Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away, and also its lust. It's all a vapor. It's all a dream. It's all a fantasy. It provides no satisfaction. None whatsoever. So right at the start, and looking at this beatitude, back to Matthew chapter 5, you could ask yourself the question, what do I really hunger for? Because the results of that question, the answer to that question, will tell you whether you are a kingdom citizen or not. I mean, what is the driving ambition of your life? What is the compelling desire of your heart? What is it that you really long for? What is it that you really want? The people who are entering my kingdom and living in my kingdom, those who are coming into my kingdom, those who are members of my kingdom, hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now, in order to unfold a little more about this beatitude, we've been asking questions in each case, and I'll ask some questions and then answer them. It works as a way to sort of take us through the elements. Number one question, how does this beatitude fit with the other ones? How does this sort of fit in? The first one, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, actually, for they shall inherit the earth. How does this sort of fit in? Well, remember now, poor in spirit means morally bankrupt. People who come into the kingdom, people who are kingdom citizens, recognize their own moral bankruptcy. They recognize their own inabilities, their own wickedness, their own sinfulness. They recognize they have nothing to offer the Lord whatsoever by which He would grant them salvation. They provide no merit. They can do nothing to earn His grace. And so there is a poverty of spirit. There's a bankruptcy of spirit. That produces, in the second beatitude, mourning. They sorrow over that sinful condition. And that sorrowing over that sinful condition produces meekness. That is to say, when you realize how morally bankrupt you are, and when you are truly broken over that, you will take the lowest place before a holy God. But rather than just stay in that sort of morbid condition, the beatitude that we're looking at tells us where you go from there. You begin to hunger and thirst for righteousness. Having recognized that you don't have any, you know you need it. When in meekness and mourning and brokenness, You see your true sinful condition and begin to hunger and thirst after righteousness, which you know you need but cannot earn, which you know you need but do not have. You are giving evidence of being a kingdom citizen. So you see, there's a sequence here. The flow is very obvious, very obvious. We live in the middle of a society chasing all the wrong things, even religious. People who think they're good enough, they're kind enough, they're nice enough, they're religious enough, and they're not bankrupt. They don't recognize their utter bankruptcy. We're not talking here about felt need. We're not talking here about, well, things aren't working out of my job, or things have kind of gotten messed up in my marriage, or I'm not really happy with the career I've got, or I got a lot of guilt and a lot of shame in my life, or I had a lot of abuse as a child, and I need to kind of get over this, and I need a sort of a psychological boost. We're not talking about that. We're talking about such an overwhelming weight of conviction about your sin that you turn to mourning, and you're left to see yourself in the lowliest of places. Jesus says, those are the very people who in that condition are going to recognize that what they desperately need is righteousness and what they don't have is righteousness, and so they hunger and thirst for it. That's how this beatitude sort of fits in with the rest. Happy are the morally bankrupt. Happy are those who weep. Happy are the meek, and happy are the hungry. And I want to emphasize all the way through this little series we do that these are conditions of entrance into the kingdom and constant characteristics of kingdom people. You don't stop realizing your moral bankruptcy after you enter the kingdom. You probably have a greater understanding of it now than you did when you were converted. You don't stop grieving over your sin. You probably grieve more now than you did then because you know so much more about your sin and how God views it from the increased knowledge of Scripture and because of the increased battle against the flesh. You don't feel more proud the longer you've been in the kingdom. You feel more humble the longer you've been in the kingdom because the more you are around the Lord, the King, the more of His glory you see, and the more of His glory you see, the more you realize your nothingness. So these are conditions of entrance into the kingdom and also characteristics of those who are kingdom people. Now, verse 6 is also transitional, not only because of what went before, but because of what comes after. If you notice in verse 7, it says, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers. Listen, that's what follows this fourth beatitude. Until you have hungered and thirsted for righteousness and then been satisfied, you can't be merciful, pure in heart, and a peacemaker. So the first three beatitudes flow into this one, and the next three beatitudes flow out of it. Where there is a sense of moral bankruptcy, weeping over sin and meekness, the heart cries out for righteousness. When that heart receives that righteousness, that individual then, who has received mercy, who has received cleansing, who has made peace with God, becomes merciful, pure in heart, and a peacemaker. The Beatitudes have a wonderful and blessed sequence. All right, a second question then, as we consider this wonderful beatitude, what does it mean to hunger and thirst? Well, I've already told you it's the idea of an intense desire. What are we really talking about here? Let's look a little more into that. The force of Christ's words, again, may not be clear to us because we don't know what it is to be hungry and to thirst. In the ancient world, they were dealing with low wages. They were dealing with scarce food. There were not fast food places. There was not accessible food. The battle for bread was basically consuming. It took up all the hours, all the waking hours of the day and all the planning moments of the night. And then there were windstorms that destroyed crops, terrible Sirocco winds in the Middle East. There were droughts. It's against that background that Christ speaks. The people in my kingdom are people who seek righteousness. That's what they want. They're not looking for prosperity. They're not looking for material prosperity. They're not looking for healings. They're not looking for wealth. They're not looking for success. They're not looking for health. They're not looking to have their marriage fixed. They're not looking to have a happier environment, a better job. They're not asking God to just tweak their life a little bit and fix up some of the things they don't like. There is a desperation in their lives, but it has nothing to do with those temporal matters. What they're desperate about, what they're hungry and thirsty for, is far beyond anything this world has to provide. They want righteousness as much as a starving man who fears death wants food and a thirsty man who fears death wants water. Desperation is the key idea. Even the Greek terms support this intense idea. Look at the word hunger, painantes, from the verb paino, to hunger, to suffer want, to be in need. Then the word thirst, dipsao, Jesus used it when he said, I thirst. To suffer thirst, dipsantes in this form, two participles. The strongest impulses in the natural realm, the need for food and the need for water. They are both, by the way, present tense participles, continuous action, showing that this is a way of life, constantly hungering, constantly thirsting for righteousness. David walked in such close communion with God that he wrote psalms about God's presence, many of them. Many of the psalms talk about how David enjoyed and rejoiced in the presence of the Lord and how he himself was comforted and how his people were comforted by the presence of the Lord. It was David who said, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And yet, in Psalm 63, 1 and 2, David says, "O God, you're my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where no water is, to see your power and your glory." Always wanting more, always hungering, always thirsting. And it was beloved Paul in Philippians chapter 3 saying that I may know him. And we would say, "Paul, you know him better than anybody else knows him." But I don't know him well enough. And all that I know about him only elevates my want to know even more. Knowing him like I know him is not enough. Peter said, "Grow in grace and in the knowledge of your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ." And we understand that. I believe, and I've said this through the years, but I believe people become Christians when they reach this desperation level. A lot of people come and go in the church and make some kind of momentary commitment to Jesus Christ. They're like that rocky ground in Matthew 13, or like that weedy ground. They come for a while, there's a little bit of show of response, and then they disappear. And the real issue, what really was wrong there, was the level of desperation wasn't high enough. Oh, they may have been desperate about a marriage problem. They may have been desperate about an economic problem. They may have been desperate about a physical problem, an illness, some kind of tragic diagnosis of some disease. They may have been desperate because of wayward children or abuse that's going on in their life somewhere or whatever it might be, some terrible trauma, some great sadness. That's not the issue. What legitimately drives people to God is not a hunger and thirst for a better life, prosperity, happiness, bliss, joy, etc., etc. What drives people is a hunger and thirst after righteousness. It's when they realize their moral bankruptcy. That's the issue. That's what must be in the heart of one who comes to the kingdom.
John MacArthur here on Today's Grace to You, wrapping up the look at how you can experience happiness from the inside out, which is the title of his current study. John, you talked about hungering for righteousness. I know helping people satisfy that hunger by teaching them God's truth is a driving force in your life. That means, of course, that the folks who stand with you in ministry hold a special place in your heart.
Well, absolutely, Carl. And there are a couple of things that thrill me about the response of people to this ministry. First of all, I rejoice in their love for the truth. It's no secret what we do. We teach the Bible. We endeavor to help people understand God's truth. if you are hungry for God's truth, this is a place where you come to be fed. So we know that, first of all, there is a common denominator among the listeners to Grace to You, and that is a longing to know God's truth, the bread of life. And that gives my heart great joy, because I'm a lover of the truth written and incarnate, and I love the people especially who also love the truth. The second thing that is a wonderful blessing that is manifest among the people who listen to this program is that so many support it. It goes beyond the sort of selfish, I love the truth and I want to be fed, to I also know there are many other people who need the truth, and I want to support it. I want to be a part of that. Critical for us to have an audience that wants to hear, critical for us to have friends who want to come alongside and make sure that many others can hear as well. And our ability to produce and air the program, to provide free books and CDs through the mail, to maintain our website, to do daily podcasts, in fact, to do everything we do, is really directly proportional to the support we receive from listeners just like you. So if you missed your opportunity to give at Grace to You's year-end emphasis, know that your support is still needed and any time through the year, and thank you for the trust you put in us.
Friend, thanks for being a part of God's work through this outreach. Let me encourage you to get in touch with us today. Let us know how you're applying what you're learning, and express your support. Let us know that you believe in Grace to You's ministry on this station. Or you can order a copy of John's current study, Happiness from the Inside Out. Contact us today. Our mailing address is Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Be sure to mention the call letters of this station when you include a gift or any time that you write us. Your support is a stewardship we take very seriously. The address again, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or call toll-free anytime, 24 hours a day, 1-800-55-GRACE. That's 800-55-G-R-A-C-E. You can also make a donation online at the website gty.org. Now, to get John's current radio study called Happiness from the Inside Out, you can buy it on 10 CDs or in 10 MP3 downloads. The cost for the CDs is $47. The total cost for the MP3s are $30. Order your CDs by calling 1-800-55-GRACE or go online to order the CDs or MP3s at gty.org. This reminder, watch for John MacArthur on the Grace to You television program on NRB-TV. It's Sunday afternoons at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. NRB-TV is channel 378 on DirecTV. That's 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, Sunday afternoons. And now, for John MacArthur and the staff, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. From everyone, including the customer service team, to the guys in the warehouse, be here Monday for another 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time. On the next Grace to You. How long since you had hunger pangs that only Jesus Christ could satisfy? A penetrating question. John will help you arrive at an honest answer on the next Grace to You.